I'm Haley.
I'm John.
And I'm Will.
And we're from Crimson Comet, a podcast member of the Gunna Geek Network.
Just like the one you're listening to now, the opinions expressed are those of the individual host.
Check out other podcasts at GunnaGeekNetwork.com and get ready, because geekiness begins in
3, 2, 1.
This is PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture. We're a geek podcast for geek culture, so are you ready to get your geek on? Sit back, relax, step out of your TARDIS and warm up your chimichangas, because this is PopX Cast.
You are listening to PopX Cast, where science fiction meets pop culture.
Captain's Log Supplemental.
PopX Cast.
Hasta la vista, baby.
And welcome, everyone. This is PopX Cast. This is episode number 50, coming to you live right here on this amazing, what is this, last Sunday in oh my God, February is almost over with? What?
I know.
How does that happen, Lindsay Batch?
That means winter's almost over. I'm actually really excited about that.
Well, you know the time sets up in a couple of weeks, right? You know the time leaps forward.
Mm-hmm.
You know what that means, don't you, though? Summertime.
Oh yeah.
Well,
let's bust out the floaties.
The floaties. Really? Got the floaties there? Oh my gosh. You crazy girl. I want to say hello to, we got Luke over in the chat, and we got David Vaughn hanging out with us as well.
Hey guys.
And those guys are doing awesome, and they're hanging out with us tonight. So let's get our geekiness on, okay? So, hey, welcome to PopX, where science fiction meets pop culture. I'm your host, Joe Burke, Central Florida's seasoned comic book nerd and retro enthusiast. We'd like to welcome everyone joining us live in the PopX.live and Geeks.live chat room. Come hang out with us and join the conversation at PopXcast.com.
And I'm Lindsay Badger, your favorite geeky okey. If you missed last week's episode 49, Origin Stories, Swamp Thing, and Man Thing, check our official website at PopXcast.com for this and other great past shows from PopX Cast.
Yes.
Be sure to head over to Google Play or iTunes after the show and click that subscribe button. Catch up on some amazing shows from PopX Archive. And hey, while you're there, we'd certainly appreciate you showing us some geeky love by leaving us a 5-star rating and review.
Oh, yes. With further ado, let's rock right on into the news this week. Don't go nowhere. We'll be right back.
Extra, extra, read all about it. This is PopX News, coming to you live, right here, on PopXcast.com.
All right, well, unfortunately, we do have to start the news on a kind of sad note, and this just literally came in this morning.
This morning.
A beloved actor, Bill Paxton, has passed away at the age of 61. We all know him for his iconic roles in Twister and many other things he's done with Apollo 13 and Predator. And just the list goes on and on. Terminator, Weird Science. There he is in Weird Science. Look at that.
He was in almost 60 different movies. So, he had a pretty awesome career.
His death is the result of complications from surgery, is what we're told. Paxton's career included many iconic fan favorite films. Like we had just mentioned, even True Lies and Aliens, if you can think about it. Yes, he was in Aliens. His career also included television roles, such as his Emmy-nominated performance in Hatfield and McCoys. He also appeared in HBO's Big Love and joined Marvel Cinematic Universe, playing John Garrett on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And so he is in the Marvel MCU as well. And our condolences and thoughts go out to the Paxton family. during her time. And just, I hate to hear this, man. That's just gone too soon. He's an amazing actor and followed him for many years.
Loved him. Yeah, he was my Big Love was one of my favorite shows that he was in, actually. It's kind of a weird show because it covers the Mormons.
Yeah.
He played a really good role in that as well. I want to mention something that was really cool about, you know, he played the role in Twister. He was a storm chaser.
Mm-hmm.
And so here in Oklahoma in the Midwest, where the movie was filmed, it was kind of a big deal. So the storm chasers here in both Kansas and Oklahoma got together and did this huge alignment where the B&P spelled out his initials with their storm tracking. The GPS locators. So all of these little dots here that spell out the B&P are people in vehicles spread between Wichita, Kansas and Oklahoma City across both of the halves of the state there. So that's a huge tribute to this guy and how much of an impact he made on the community here in the Midwest. So
that's truly an honor and an honor to an amazing individual, you know?
Yeah, that's a really big salute to a really impactful actor.
Yes, yes.
We're going to move on to
some more enlightening stuff.
Happier news, I suppose. We're going to talk about the CW's Arrowverse. It's become a bona fide pop culture fixation, bringing Green Arrow, Flash, Supergirl, and the Legends of Tomorrow crew into the mainstream. The biggest benefit are the times when characters from one show cross over into another show. Those fun times, cumulative this past fall with the big Invasion crossover event. However, as Fan pointed out, the Invasion crossover wasn't quite a four-part epic event that the Arrowverse producers had promised. Andrew Kreisberg teased that an actual four-show Arrowverse crossover event is to come, saying that next year we are hoping to do a true four-way crossover.
Mm-hmm.
He went on to describe how, in the case of Invasion, Supergirl's recent addition to the CW lineup prevented them from having the necessary scheduling time to incorporate all of Supergirl's actors into the other Arrowverse shows. Well, that makes some sense.
Yeah,
now that's been kind of
if you think about it too, I mean, there was only like 30 seconds in Supergirl where actually.
Really not a part of that storyline much at all.
Not at all.
They tried.
So hopefully in 2017, we'll have a proper crossover event where everything will just align perfectly and all four shows will have a featured prominent crossover event. So it would be.
I hope so. I look forward to it.
It would be cool to see Arrow on Supergirl.
Even just the mini crossovers, like towards the earlier seasons with just Arrow and Flash, you know, just got me excited.
Well, keeping in tune here with comics, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has become known for its expansive shared continuity, with its numerous films, television shows, and related media being affected by the storylines of each other. But for another side of Marvel's creative outputs, its growing list is of video games, a different setup will be used, especially with Sony's upcoming Spider-Man release. So this is going to be really interesting. The upcoming video game Marvel will be tied to, which kind of centers around characters from across the company's slate of characters, will not have a shared continuity with each other. So the video games and the movies will be different. We want to give developers freedom to tell their story, and we want to make it an original story, said the Marvel Games creative director Bill Roseman. We want to give our partners freedom to look at all the Marvel history and to pick from whatever interests them. It's a bit like we're saying, hey, you're the chef, and you're going to make this meal. Here's all the ingredients. You pick the ingredients you'd like, and let's make a meal together. So pretty much when you think about it, yeah, I do too, and it doesn't necessarily have to fit in the continuity of Marvel Cinematic, so I like that, and I like it's going to be an original story, which means what? That means gamers can't predict the ending unless you actually get there.
That's true. I love it whenever they allow people to exercise their creative license a little bit and kind of follow their own path and do their own thing. It's not so, you know, channeled. I like that.
Yeah, me too.
All right, so we're going to dive into a little bit of X-Men here, because Logan's coming up, you guys.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Stewart has said that he is officially done with the X-Men movie universe after the latest film. Stewart said that during an interview after viewing the film, "I was so moved by it, much more moved than I had been the first time of seeing it." Mm. Then the movie ended. "And when we're going to be taken up on stage, but not until the credits were over. So I had some time to sit there. And as I sat there, I realized that there will never be a better, more perfect, more sensitive, emotional, and beautiful way of saying au revoir to Charles Xavier than this movie. So I told Hugh that same evening, I am done too. It's over." Now, you guys, this is amazing.
Wow.
You can only imagine how great this movie is going to be just based off of that little piece of news right there.
Yeah, and you know, Patrick Stewart is a very distinguished actor with his accolades, you know, going back many, many years, even long before the Star Trek The Next Generation. And to hear him say that about the role that he's played, and it, Charles Xavier has been very near and dear to his heart, and to hear him sign off mm-hmm. in that way, it's going to be truly, I think it's going to be cinematically, it's going to be beautiful to watch. And I'm personally truly excited. I can't wait. Thursday night cannot get here any quicker so I can see Logan.
Bring a box of Kleenex with you, because you know there's going to be some tears.
Well, you know what though? I mean, you say that Hugh Jackman has been doing this thing is since 1999. So has Patrick Stewart. They've both been in the same thing since 1999, doing this characters. And you know, at some point,
it's a long time to carry a role.
It's a long time to carry a role, and at some point, you just got to say, "Okay, I'm done," you know, and move on with it. And I think that's where they're going. So moving on in terms of X-Men and Fox, looks like Gambit is a movie many fans were looking forward to, as a card slinging Cajun was set to debut on the big screen in November of 2016 with Channing Tatum in the role. Slowly, the reality is set in. The film would not be released in its original window, as production never began until November 2016 came and went, and we never did get a Gambit movie. For those fans still hoping to see Gambit take over the silver screen for his own film, there has been an exciting update straight from X-Men producer Simon Kinberg. It's in active development, Kinberg said. It's a movie that we will hope to be ready to go by the end of this year and shoot next year, beginning in 2018. We have two or three X-Men-related movies this year, so I can't wait for a moment. The process has been that Channing Tatum is determined about getting the character right, as Ryan Reynolds was about getting Deadpool and Hugh Jackman was about doing the Logan movie. We know that we get those rights, the movie will succeed. So if we get everything aligned correctly and the cards right, and Channing actually gets into this role, we'll be able to take on a whole new beginning era of the franchise. So I think that that's going to be really awesome. Hmm. Gambit is a lot of fans.
So what you're trying to say is Channing Tatum will not be taking his shirt off in this movie.
I don't know. Maybe he will. I don't know. But I think
there goes those sales.
But I honestly think though that Simon Kinberg got it right. You know how Logan, Hugh Jackman embodied the essence of Wolverine, and Patrick Stewart and even Ryan Reynolds with Deadpool.
I appreciate an actor that takes a role of a character that's been established for so many decades, and it takes that seriously and tries to get it right. I appreciate that effort.
Absolutely. Moving along here.
All right. In one of those things you can only pull off on the printed comic page, Marvel editor-in-chief Axel Alonso is teasing a new character and the major new development in the Marvel universe. Tweeting out a single image with the words "under construction," Alonso teased something might be something called Batch H.
Mm-hmm. Batch H.
And this, yes, Batch H. And that single image of a massive Hulk-like figure in a tube with Wolverine's signature three claws coming out of each hand.
Hmm.
Ooh, so are we like...
Well, Here's what happened in 2014.
It's like the, Bruce the Banner, chop shop of superheroes.
Well, Bruce Banner and Logan both died in the comics. So it's no big thing to actually see them, try to clone them, and bring them back into the comics as well, into a new form. So I think that might be what they're trying to do. They're trying to rebirth them. But I don't know, okay, is the DNA is going to get mixed up? I don't know what's going to happen here.
That looks scary.
Well, if you think about it, Incredible Hulk is not unstoppable. So if you give the Incredible Hulk an adamantium skeleton, he's indestructible.
So what happens when Hulk is not angry?
When is Hulk never? Well, he turns into Bruce Banner when he's not angry.
Well, right, but does Bruce Banner also have the same skeleton structure if it's cloned this way?
I don't know how they're going to work it out.
All right, we can speculate for days.
Yeah, we can. That's going to be cool, though, to see if that actually pans out and see how it works.
Let's just marinate on that one.
Let's overnight, shall we, in the refrigerator. Yes. All right, so with the 40th anniversary of celebration of Star Wars officially kicking off with Star Wars Celebration Orlando in 2017, the newly announced 40th anniversary panel could have a much-anticipated and much-rumored announcement, the original trilogy, original cut. What?
Ooh.
The rumor of Star Wars A New Hope, The Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi getting a high-end, non-special edition release has been circulating since before Disney purchased Lucasfilm. Though it was an impossibility with George Lucas still in charge, Disney would also have distribution legal issues to work out with 20th Century Fox, because if you remember, 20th Century Fox is the credits that roll at the beginning of the film, and would have to face the decision of somewhat clouding the message of whatever George's newer cuts, which hit theaters in 1997 with additional CGI, reworked scenes, and some major changes, were the quote-unquote official versions or not. Nonetheless, fans have worked together a despecialized edition in illegal bootleg copies, and a rumor resurfaced last year that a higher quality version of the original cuts, both 1080p, Blu-ray, 4, and 4K, for even higher-end TVs, has been created by Lucasfilm. It sounds like that rumor turns out to be true, and that the releases are actually about ready to come out.
Oh, nice. So, now, I remember you telling me about this mystical version of the originals floating around, and it's cool that they're actually going to come out and release it.
It's called the Star Wars Despecialized Editions, and basically they have some fans have gotten together and restored old reel-to-reel copies of the original film, and it's in 1080p. It actually looks really good, and I don't recommend going out and downloading it. A friend of mine gave me a copy of it, but it is illegal. If you don't own the copies of Star Wars already, I wouldn't recommend, you know, going against them being a rule breaker. But
okay, so we're just going to forget that Joe said that the last 10 seconds.
Yeah, whatever. Whatever I just said, strike that, reverse it, just move on.
Just reverse. All right. Yeah. Well, it looks like we got some more Disney news here. Mm-hmm. After weeks of rumors, Disney officially announced that Rogue One will come home on digital HD on March 24th, 2017, and on Blu-ray and DVD on April 4th, 2017. The home release will include a collection of bonus material, including behind-the-scenes featurettes on every major character, and an intriguing-sounding feature called Epilogue, The Story Continues. Ooh.
Mm-hmm.
Which promises to look forward into the future to Star Wars stories yet to be told. Oh my gosh, give it to me now. I want to see this stuff.
Yeah, this is going to be a really great extra. A lot of fans will be buying it just for the extras alone, because they're probably going to get sneak peeks into the new one coming out this December, The Last Jedi. So
I know Joe's going to go to Walmart and be like hovering over the boxes as they open them in the middle of Walmart.
I got to be honest with you. I don't go to Walmart anymore. I do Amazon Prime,
and there
I get the day of shipping. And so, you know,
I've done that before. That's super spoiled. Yeah, Amazon spoils us.
Amazon Prime spoils us. But you know, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, I get a knock on the door. Boom! There's my package on the day it releases.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Come again. I see you long time. Anyway, I don't know if that offended anyone. I'm so sorry.
Anyway. Love that beautiful Star Wars.
All right, moving on. We have Voltron. Legendary Defender Season 2 is currently out on Netflix with a strong response from fans. As Season 2 continues the rebooted saga of the Voltron Lions, plans are reportedly already in to place to air Season 3. Voltron Season 3 will be premiering in September of 2017. Not only that, but reportedly there will also be 10 episodes of Classic Voltron airing on Netflix in March. So you get the original 80s Voltron, as well as an additional content from Season 2, which will be released prior to Season 3. Now, no word on that with the additional content would be, as it must be said that all of this should be taken with a grain of salt, not until Netflix themselves confirms it. But this is what is in the talks in the DreamWorks world. So
the rumors.
So Season 3 is supposed to come out in September. Sometime between March and September, we're supposed to get the original Season 1 of Voltron. So that's what's been said right now.
That's awesome. Yeah. All right, well, let's wrap up the news this week with some comic book news. Mm-hmm. This March sees the release of DC's next big step in integrating Watchmen into their mainline universe with the Batman-Flash crossover, The Button. Centering on the smiley face paraphernalia that Bruce discovered in the Batcave at the close of last year's DC Universe Rebirth special, DC has also released the cover for Flash number 22 with the return of Golden Age Flash Jay Garrick.
Ooh, look at that.
I love it when Jay Garrick makes a return.
You're looking pretty fly. Look at that, man. He's got the metal hat and everything.
He's got that hat all shined up.
Have you noticed since John Wesley Shipp has reprised the role of Jay Garrick on The Flash that you see a lot more Jay Garrick stuff out there now? I kind of like
it's definitely that. Yeah, I like the throwback wink to the classic Flash TV stuff.
Well, guys, awesome. That is officially the end of our news segment, and as we wrap up that, we're going to go straight on in to this week's topic, which is the part 5 of our history lesson of Rise of Comics and Pop Culture. And so if you've been listening to any of our podcasts from PopX from the past 50 episodes, you will notice that on the tens of each episode, we will do a part 1, 2, 3, and 4. Now, this is part 5. This is episode 50. And we have actually, if you go back to part 1, we've talked about how comic books started in the early 20s and 30s when pulp magazines, and even how the stories and the things that were feeding the media at the time with mobs and prohibition and just everything that was going on. You know, you had the Bonnie and Clydes. Those new stories kind of fueled characters that individuals created for comics, like Dick Tracy, for example, and you had the Man of Bronze himself. You had a lot of guys that would come out of that era. So if you fast forward, we have a lot of things in the comic realm are actually classified by precious metals. So you've got the Golden Age, the Silver Age, the Bronze Age, and all the way up through to today, which is what we're going to be covering today, which is the Modern Age / Millennial Age of comics. And so let's give you a quick refresher here, just what we've been covering over the past 4 episodes, if you've been following us on the history of comics. In case you need a quick refresher, comics are divided into ages that are represented by precious metals, the oldest being Platinum Age. Now, Platinum Age goes all the way back to comics that were related in the 1800s and early 1900s. We're talking about comics that were in just newspapers, that is the vintage art of storytelling. But the Golden Age kind of picks up around the 30s and 50s, and it marked the birth of comics' greatest heroes like Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, and more are by a respected publisher known as Detective Comics. Detective Comics, of course, is DC. They were the original. They were the ones that trended out. There's Jay Garrick prominently right on the front of that comic book. Look at that. That's the old school Justice Society.
I love the old cover.
Yeah, I love that old artwork. That's cool stuff. So the Golden Age also saw birth to another great hero in Captain America under the first fast-rising company known as Timely Comics. And that would later go on to, as we all know today, as Marvel Comics. The Silver Age, actually progressed into the 60s and the 70s, and it brought Marvel to the forefront under two powerhouse names with Mr. Stan Lee and Jack Kirby. Of course, no names, no strangers to the game here. We've heard these names many, many times here on PopX. They would create many of the great characters that we love seeing and reading about today, and they brought them to life. Such names as Spider-Man, the X-Men, Fantastic Four, and just so many more classics. And as we progress on from that, from the 70s, we go into the 70s and 80s, and this is called the Bronze Age. And it was marked by Jack Kirby's departure from Marvel to work for DC. So that was kind of that. The decline in demand for superhero stories and rebirth of horror comics. There was this era in comics where everybody wanted to read about Dracula, and the werewolves, and mummies and stuff like that.
So, zombies.
Pretty much, yeah, absolutely. So horror comics, and it ended with the cancellation of several popular Marvel titles in the mid-90s. And then we kind of progress into what we call the modern age of comics, which is the 90s through the early 2000s. It's the period that we are in now, technically. We've actually entered into a new period beyond that. We'll talk about that here in a little bit later. But we're talking about a deviation from the metallic description of bronze, you know, silver, platinum, gold. We're actually moving from that and actually going into more of a modernized standard way. Such artists like Todd McFarlane, Alex Ross, Jim Lee, Frank Miller, these guys have pretty much catapulted comics into a whole new era. And not just these guys, but we're going to be talking about indie comics as well. The creation of more independent comic companies, specifically Image Comics and movies, began playing bigger roles as many famous comic characters and properties were given the Hollywood treatment. As strange as it may sound to some comics, they have value like precious metals. They are bought, sold, and traded daily, and their value kind of rises with time. With the current explosion of comic-based and geek culture films in Hollywood, they have become an even greater and more coveted investment for the comic book collector.
That's true. I think that even with the digital versions, the printed ones are going to go even higher up in value.
Oh yeah,
you'll see that. You'll see that probably skyrocket
That was so. I was actually on eBay not too long ago. Before you go to the next segment, the Amazing Fantasy, the first appearance of Spider-Man, is actually up around the $400,000-$500,000 range now for a mid grade print of that.
It's crazy. Yeah. Well, guys, let's dive into the timeline of the modern age, shall we?
Yes.
We're going to start with 1998 to 2000, the dark age of modern comics. Sales were slumping. Comics in this era were grittier and more gory and darker than ever. Idealists like Alan Moore, Frank Miller, and Todd McFarlane opened the lid to this era. It was the turn of the century. Technology was rapidly changing. And in 1999, comics and publishing began their battle with their greatest foe and civilization's greatest friend, Napster.
Can you believe Napster was hurting the industry back in the day?
Why was Napster hurting them? I don't, because that was more music, right?
Wait, Napster was file sharing. So what people were doing, scanning the comics, creating PDFs. And
there you go.
Instead of actually going out to the store and buying it, you go to Napster and you can download Spider-Man number one for free and have it.
There you go. Okay. Yeah, that makes so much. Napster hurt a lot of. It was great for us, the consumers, but it's horrible for any art world. All right, so then we move into 1999. Three films changed the modern film industry. The Mummy, yes, The Mummy with Brendan Fraser, was the first film to have a computer-generated character to have a full human anatomy. Imhotep in The Mummy was courtesy of the famed Industrial Light and Magic. But it was The Matrix that changed the action films forever with the creation of bullet time and its Oscar-winning techniques, as well as George Lucas setting the standards on digital filmmaking with the release of Star Wars Episode I, The Phantom Menace. Mm-hmm. Now, I love all of those movies yeah. so much. The Mummy, meh, but the other two, so much. Mm-hmm. All right, so then we move into 2001. 9/11 changes the world, mm-hmm. and Marvel releases a full black cover in the commemoration with the Amazing Spider-Man number 36.
Yeah.
So that kicks off our timeline for the
this
modern
this
age.
Particular comic here. While Mike's got this image up, if you go in, he's actually doing his normal day in New York, like most New Yorkers were during that time. And then he sees the planes hit the world. Peter Parker sees the planes hit the World Trade Center. And there's this scene of Peter Parker high above Ground Zero. And you just see the plumes of smoke and the fire. And he's got his mask off and he's just looking completely, utter, devastated. And then towards the end of the comic, you actually see villains and heroes helping people lift the debris and rubble from Ground Zero. So
I just got goosebumps right now, you guys. So I'm just going to tell you right now.
this is the only comic in Marvel history where heroes and villains put down their gripes for one season to help find those who were still under the debris and that's a lot to digest.
Wow. Yeah. Now this is a comic that if you don't own, you need to get your hands on because
yeah.
that one is definitely a...
There was a time in my life I did have this comic, but unfortunately I didn't really understand the impact that it had on society, and I ended up trading it to another comic, and I kind of wish now I had not had done that. That was a very big mistake on my end. But
well, if you ever see it again, you better snatch it up.
It's about $200 now if you want to find this comic.
Oh,
that's if you get it. That's if you get it in a in a 9.0 mint condition. Mm-hmm. You know.
Yes.
Yeah, anyway. So moving along here, so 2001 was a devastating year for a lot of industries. A lot of things happened, and even the comic book industry was influenced. But in 2002, we get a climactic rebirth. Sony Pictures' Spider-Man makes its debut, finally, bringing Spidey to the big screen for the first time. Long in development, it was kind of pretty much in development hell for about 10 years. The Spider-Man film was something of a myth. Nobody really, you heard about it, but nobody ever believed it would actually come to fruition. And it had always been a rumor, mainly because the filmmaking technology wasn't good enough to capture Spider-Man at all in his glory. And so we get films, if you back up to 98, like The Mummy, where they were doing full-body CGI, they actually fast-forward 5 years in the future, and they were able to render Spider-Man in a fully functioning 3D render and actually have Spider-Man whisk through New York on spiderwebs and stuff. Then we go into 2003. Comics changed forever with the birth of digital comics. This is the first time ever that we started seeing comics showing up in a digital format, and it was pretty awesome. And this was the year digital sales began being tracked. This is the beginning of the end of the modern era of comics. So what I was telling you between the 90s and the 2000s, that's the modern era. When the digital comics started coming out in 2003, that was the end, as we know it, of the modern era and the beginning of the millennial era. So Fox premieres Daredevil, and it is panned by fans and critics, quickly become one of the worst superheroes films ever made. And it's of course it has Ben Affleck in it. Now you know what, I actually own this film on Blu-ray, and it's okay. I mean it's not as bad as people say it is, but that's just my personal take on it. Though Fox takes a misstep with Marvel's properties, they bounce back with X2 and X-Men sequel, which is received well by fans and critics, and thus we get Mr. Hugh Jackman. There he is. Also. It's very prominent that we note in 2003 by a little guy that lives in Kentucky in the name of Robert Kirkman, The Walking Dead makes its premiere on Image Comics, one of the great titles that pretty much ushers in the millennial era.
There you go.
Yes.
Oh my goodness. All right, well, we'll continue. Next year, 2004, Spider-Man 2 debuts, another blockbuster hit with fans and critics, as well as financially making Spider-Man a modern global phenomenon. Now, mm-hmm. I remember this. Yes. He was big stuff. And then the following year, 2005, Warner Brothers reboots Batman with Batman Begins. Mm-hmm. Now with the darker tone, helmed by Christopher Nolan, with Christian Bale playing the Dark Knight. They created a successful trilogy that went into the Millennium Age and laid the foundation for the new DC film universe and even the new reboot of the comics with the New 52 later. Fox debuts their version of Fantastic Four. Writing the comic book movie high, it banks at the box office, but is discounted by viewers as subpar. Mm-hmm. All right. In 2006, Marvel Comics releases Civil War, splitting the fan base into two. While at DC, they did a weekly comic release event in the 52 after the Infinite Crisis sequel. Mm-hmm. All right. DC also concluded its animated universe. It had began in the mid 90s with Batman the Animated Series.
Mm-hmm.
X-Men 3. Yeah, it was good. X-Men 3 Last Stand is released, and the chinks in the Fox's armor begin to show. Bryan Singer's departure to make Superman Returns. Okay. Yeah. I was like, wait a minute. Super.
Yeah.
All right. Superman Returns hurts both franchises in a big way.
So while we see here, Fox is trying to get in on the cash cow, like Sony Pictures and Tobey Maguire's Spider-Man.
There's competition afoot.
They're starting to, So they try to introduce the Fantastic Four, and even though it's a decent film at most, it's nothing like a blockbuster.
That's hard to match up against Batman
And that was the first time we actually got Christian Bale playing the role of Batman. And so we hadn't seen Batman on the big screen since Michael Keaton. Well, technically Val Kilmer and George Clooney was the last couple to play Batman. But it was interesting, though, because it was the first time we actually got the dark, gritted voiced Batman that we all kind of, I don't want to say make fun of and poke and prod today, but it's kind of the first time that we get Commissioner Gordon. Anyway, moving on.
I'd like to pause for just a moment and say hello to everyone over in the chat room. Mr. Wagner.
Wagner.
And Luke's still hanging out with us. And I know David's still been making some awesome comments along the way. And also our dear friend Zach Blum is also in the chat room. Oh. So we have a party hanging out over there.
Nice.
Thank you guys for hanging out with us tonight.
Yes, yes, yes. Well, as we progress, now we've actually officially hit the millennial age. All right, mm-hmm. we're progressing. And so we're up to 2004 and 2007, excuse me. And this is kind of where the modern age of comics film ends with kind of a dud, actually. Spider-Man 3 is released and is disappointment critically across the board. Though it does gross nearly $1 billion, the Fantastic Four sequel Part 2 is released by Fox, and of course it bombs, barely breaking even. And so some of these companies like Fox and Sony are a little bit on the struggle bus right now, trying to recuperate.
Yeah.
So Marvel Comics kills America's greatest hero in Captain America, subsequently killing and marking the end of the modern age of comics as well from Marvel. And so so Steve Rogers is no more currently, according to this.
Anyway, you've yet to see that in the movies yet.
It's coming. Comixology, a reading and subscription service for digital comics, is birthed and founded. Comixology, as we know today, is one of the biggest and largest distribution of comic book, whether it's indie or DC and Marvel, or anything in between. So here we go. We're actually at 2008, and it is the birth of the millennial age. The birth of the millennium age of comics and comic books-based films. Comics sales were pretty much double what they were in 2000 and showed no sign of slowing down. The fear of death of published books begins to kind of teeter-totter, and a new renaissance arises with the waking sun as a digital and published comics create a cohesive partnership. DC lays the groundwork for a big change, and Marvel Comics universe is rebuilding after the Civil War. While the company takes their biggest risk yet, Marvel Studios puts out Iron Man. Oh, yes. Indeed.
Iron Man.
Iron Man Part 1, Mr. RDJ. So the film is a critical and monetary hit and pretty much resurrects the dying career of a favorite, once favorite actor, Mr. Robert Downey Jr. Kevin Feige and company begin to lay down the foundation for an even bigger project and continue with the reboot release of The Incredible Hulk. And so The Incredible Hulk came out in 2008. Of course, we had it in 2003. A little bit of lackluster results in 2003. Not so good. But this one is actually considered to be part of the cinematic continuity. The hit film sparks confidence in the array of character Marvel Studios owns, sparking the second comic book arms race of the new millennium. Through a smaller imprint, Marvel Publishers, a creator-owned comic by Mark Miller and John Romita Jr., it was called Kick-Ass. You remember that movie that came out?
I remember Kick-Ass, yeah. Yes.
So Warner Brothers releases their anticipated sequel to The Dark Knight, and that is met with critical acclaim and sorrow with the death of the actor Joker, Mr. Heath Ledger. Oh, man.
And we still hurt over that.
I think everybody hurts over that. What an amazing actor. And honestly, one of the best Jokers ever to be filmed, if I have to go on the record and saying. So after giving a legendary Oscar-winning performance, Batman Part 2 pretty much was a huge success. And I want to say mainly might be in part of Heath Ledger's portrayal as the Joker.
Yep, I think a lot of people would agree with that. Yep. All right, well, we're moving on into 2009. Disney acquires Marvel Entertainment in a $4 billion deal. Mm. Now, I remember that was huge news. It was big. Many speculate the end of Marvel, while Fox releases Wolverine Origins to much anticipation. It is a complete bomb and failure creatively. Saved by another master performance by Hugh Jackman. After the film's release, it is apparent that Fox has lost its creative prowess. Even though it makes enough money to guarantee another film, which had been talked of after Origins release, that would be set Wolverine in Japan based on original comic series by Chris Claremont and Frank Miller. Mm-hmm. At this point, Wolverine's first appearance in The Incredible Hulk 181 is selling at astronomical prices, and the four-part miniseries starts attracting attention. Now we move on to 2010, where The Walking Dead television show premieres on AMC with rave reviews from Image Comics writer Robert Kirkman. And it is still huge
going
today.
Going on, yes. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Marvel releases Iron Man 2. They stick with the hot hand and use Robert Downey Jr.'s masterful portrayal as the driving force for what would later become Marvel's cinematic universe as Marvel Cinematic Universe as we know it. All right. A copy of Action Comics number 1 sells for $1 million. God.
First
for
appearance
one
of Superman.
Comic. For, yes, yeah, the first appearance of Superman for people that don't know what Action Comics number 1 is. San Diego Comic-Con breaks attendance records with over 130,000 attendees.
Okay.
That's a lot of people.
So let's pause here and kind of reflect for a minute.
Yeah.
So comics are starting to end in 90s and the 2000s. They're starting the sales are starting to go down. You know, the readers aren't buying into their story gimmicks and all of that. And as you can see, we're kind of focusing a lot on movies and film as opposed to actual comic books. There's a reason why that is. The movies pretty much in the past 10 years has revitalized the entire comic book industry as we know it. Mm-hmm. Many kids or many people today will go to the cinema and watch Avengers and not really understanding, you know who Captain America is, but you don't understand much about the story, the characters, or the plot. they end up going back the following few days, picking up a couple of comics at the local comic book shop, which is starting to increase sales. So they're actually seeing movies first and then buying comics later, as opposed to buying comics first and then seeing movies later. So,
and then they get hooked, they get a Comicology account, and it's just an ongoing craziness.
It's crazy. So let's transition over into 2011 if we can.
Okay.
So DC ends the volume one run for most of its first famous action titles, including Detective Comics, Superman, and Batman. So those long running 700 numbers, you know, going up into the 700s, DC pretty much ended it all. And they ended it with their Flashpoint event. And that pretty much reboots the brand new 52 versions of the characters.
Thanks, Flash.
So Flash went back in time, changed the timeline, and now we have the new 52. So that's where we're at. This can officially declare as the beginning of the new DC Millennium Age. Wizard Magazine and Price Guide ceases its publication. Wizard Magazine was huge around the early 90s when I was growing up in high school. If you didn't get a copy of Wizard Magazine, you didn't know how much your comics were worth. So that was a...
Oh, okay. I was going to ask you, I was like, what is Wizard Magazine? Because I don't know what
Well, they would, they would actually have interviews in there with comic creators and stuff like that. So, and it would tell you what new toys are coming out, what new comics are coming out. That was kind of like your end-all, be-all magazine. So the first Avenger premieres, bringing Captain America to life, and a copy of Captain America Comics number one starts selling for over $343,000. Archie Comics number one sells for a record $167,000 at Heritage Auctions, while a copy of Amazing Fantasy number 15 sells for $1.5 million, the first appearance of Peter Parker Spider-Man. Fox releases X-Men First Class, something of a reboot, while maintaining continuity with the original Fox X-Men films. And in 2012, Image Comics releases a Saga and Thief of Thieves, and a copy of Walking Dead number one begins to sell for over $10,000 just a few years after its first release. Yes. So,
that's a big deal.
So
they didn't have to wait 100 years.
Though there have been many comic events through the years, Avengers vs. X-Men and Age of Ultron were the biggest during the era up until now for Marvel Comics, while their focus has been on the film renditions of their properties. All their previous movie releases lead up to this year with the release of The Avengers, and that was a big deal when it came out in 2012, changing superheroes' films forever and really setting the bar for what we have today. Amazing Spider-Man concludes its Volume 1 run, just as Sony reboots the Spider-Man franchise with Mr. Andrew Garfield. The Amazing Spider-Man recasting Spider-Man with American British actor Mr. Andrew Garfield. It is another flop for Sony, critically, but a sequel is kind of green-lit. The proud franchise that was once the jewels of modern film era has now began to fade, and Sony is starting to lose money on Spidey. Tales of Suspense, Iron Man's first appearance, sells for $375,000, shattering its previous record of $147,000. So as you see, as the popularity of these film characters and cinematically they start increasing, the original first appearances of these characters begins to skyrocket as demand becomes more prominent.
Man.
Yeah.
Okay, sorry. Where did we leave off? I'm answering questions in the chat at the same time, so I had to look away.
Earth to Lindsay. All right, so we are at 2013. Yeah.
All right. So in 2013, Iron Man 3 premieres to record-breaking numbers, marking the end of Phase 1 of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Soon after, Marvel announces Phase 2 and premieres the Avengers sequel title Age of Ultron at San Diego Comic-Con, sparking the second comic book arms race in the Millennium Age.
Mm-hmm.
Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. premieres on ABC, giving a new platform for Marvel fans to indulge and comic collectors to expand their collections. Marvel also reclaims the film rights to several of their former properties, Daredevil, Punisher, Ghost Rider, and Blade. DC releases Man of Steel, another Superman reboot, in hopes of creating a new film universe similar to what Marvel had created. Mm-hmm. Fox releases the Wolverine, the much anticipated sequel to Wolverine Origins, a huge improvement from the previous film, but still not without its faults. Prices on Wolverine miniseries crash, and the fans begin clamoring for Hugh Jackman to appear in the Marvel Studios film, though impossible due to license rights. They are still asking.
I'm telling you, yeah.
It's like,
well, I think they want to see Hugh Jackman and Mark Ruffalo and the Hulk throw down.
They do.
And it's just like, why can't we have these guys while they're in their prime do that, you know?
I know, right? That would be awesome. Also, Batman Adventures number 12, the first appearance of Harley Quinn in the DC Comics, sells for over $1,000. I know. 2014, the millennium age of comics is in full swing with the sale of a rare Superman first appearance comic for $3.2 million. Jeez. Zach was asking about the first appearance earlier. In 2014, it was $3.2 million. The first real big event for the millennium age of comics in Marvel happens with Original Sin.
Mm-hmm. It's a series that they put out.
DC continues reintroducing its classic characters in a new age form, as well as giving their villains the spotlight in their Forever Evil event. I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
Marvel brings back Peter Parker as Spider-Man in a Volume 3 series. And a new female, Thor, is named, and the Falcon takes the shield as the new Captain America, as well as new Mrs. Marvel with a Muslim background. Mm-hmm. That's a new twist on things. All right. Also, Image Comics continues to assert itself as a force to be reckoned with. With Walking Dead still going strong, it continues to release new engaging titles that deviate from the normal superhero comic Marvel and DC provide. It releases Outcast and Sex Criminals to rave reviews and continues to sell out many popular titles. Fox Pictures premieres X-Men Days of Futures Past and sales of The Uncanny X-Men number 141 are at its peak. Marvel releases Captain America Winter Soldier and Guardians of the Galaxy, introducing audiences deeper into the cosmic realm of the MCU. Both receive rave reviews and together gross over $1.4 billion worldwide. Marvel then follows up by announcing their Phase 3 lineup, and DC and Warner Brothers announce their ambitious plan to create their own film universe, starting with a sequel to Man of Steel with Batman versus Superman, to eventually lead to a Justice League movie, ushering the third comic book arms race of the millennium age. Now we know how well Batman Superman went over. hopefully Justice League kind of heals
It's kind of mixed reviews, honestly. And so it's really interesting how everything's playing out, because now we're starting to get into the era in which we're almost currently at the film in the theaters. And Lindsay, I'll take these last two here and we'll just kind of wrap things up. With comic book based films set to be released through 2020, you can pretty much be sure that the age of comics, this age in particular, will probably be one of the greatest. Marvel and Sony's alliance has opened up the door for a bright future that we can rest assured that they will producing quality films. As far as DC and Warner Brothers, we can only hope and speculate until films are released as to what their future holds. Either way, Superman and Batman have a loyal following, and DC fans won't rest until they have a film universe that can stand next to Marvel's. The only wild card is Fox, and pretty much has to hope that someone will be like Sony and try to build a bridge with Marvel Studios now that their superhero film world has been written into a corner, pretty much. But the real solution is for fans to voice for the rights to be returned to Marvel. And we want Fantastic Four to come back to Marvel. We want the X-Men
to come back.
To
be written the way they're meant to be.
Yeah. So time will only tell where that conflict leads. With these studios continuing to feed the Hollywood engine with new stories and characters people create, you can pretty much bet that both comics and publishers and digital in the film print will be produced at a greater volume, quality, and rate than any other in the past previous ages that we've mentioned. So pretty much when you think about where we are today, we're coming out of 2016, going into 2017, and 2015 pretty much burst what I like to call the streaming MCU, where we got Daredevil, Jessica Jones,
all the Defenders,
Luke Cage, the Defenders.
Iron Fist is coming out.
Yeah, and so you have all these great shows that are now pretty much feeding the fuel of comic envy fans. And then we have, not to mention, DC's Arrowverse, which is Arrow, The Flash, DC's Legends, and Supergirl. All of these
are kind
of...
And then there's the new one, Black Lightning? Is that
It's supposed to be Black Lightning.
It's supposed to be coming.
We even have a version of Archie that is emerging with Riverdale.
Totally forgot about Riverdale. I discounted it for a minute.
But with all of this said, there's actually something that we need to mention is the birth of the indie comic. So the indie comic, when you think about the era in which a lot of the artists like Todd McFarlane, Rob Liefeld, Jim Lee, when they were working at Marvel, they all pretty much revolted. There was a squabble. There was a legal issue back in the day where pages of original Jack Kirby's work were left out of comics intentionally. And the artists felt that this was kind of a tragedy. Like, why would you want to leave some of his artwork out? He was an amazing artist. And so they revolted, and a lot of them went to form their own comics, like Image, for example. Todd McFarlane founded Image Comics on the heels of Spawn. He created Spawn. And just a few years later, there was a Spawn cartoon on HBO, and then that fueled into a Spawn actual feature film. So you get this whole indie comic vibe. You got Preacher as well. Robert Kirkman's doing The Walking Dead. There's so many indie-related comics out there now that you're actually starting to see in mainstream. And it's all because of individuals who are inspired to create, and somehow they get picked up. It doesn't mean you necessarily have to work for DC or Marvel, but if you've got a good story and you can tell it in a certain way, you know, this is the millennial age of comics where anything goes. Yeah, think about it. If I go back to a few episodes, we had Audrey Brown Williams on, and she's creating an indie comic of her own right here in Florida. And I'm one of the artists helping her with her cover art. And so she's had us this really great story to tell. And she is digitally pushing out her comic to the fans that want to buy it for a couple bucks a piece. Mm-hmm. So we are in that age where if you can tell a good story and you can create a good universe around that story, you have a medium and an outlet. This is like live streaming what we're doing today. So, with all of that said, sorry, man. We got Wagner over here in the chat room. Yes, Wagner, we need to talk later, my friend. I'm a little bit of a nerd when it comes to
a little bit of a nerd.
Yeah. But that's what you get when you're a certified comic book historian. Because So let's actually close up the show here and want to say a tearful goodbye to part 5 of the history of comics, the finale, if you will.
This brings this little series to a close. If you guys didn't see the first 4 parts, we do have them on our website. You guys, I encourage you to go back and watch them. I learned so much from just being a part of these shows, listening to the shows. And this show just kind of wraps it up and puts a little bow on top of all the awesome geeky goodness that this series has brought us.
And, you know, just for a little tip for you, a little PopX tip, if you want to know, episode 1 is episode 10, episode 2 is episode 20, 3 is 30, 4 is 40, and 5 is 50. So, so if you really want to get into the history of comics, you can actually go back and listen to those and learn about how the Jewish immigrants fled Nazi Germany and came over here and founded a lot of these comic print companies that we know today. And there's a lot of great information in there. We even go into the atomic age of comics when nuclear was a big thing, and the splitting of the atom kind of influenced the comic books that we know today.
All big sci-fi influence with the aliens.
Was, yeah, and it was just, there was a, you know, the 60s was this science explosion, and it created characters that were birthed out of science, like the Incredible Hulk, the Flash, Barry Allen, and, you know, horrible science projects gone wrong created superheroes that are pretty much thriving today. And so the eras in which they lived and the writers lived created pretty much icons.
A lot of what goes
today
on in real life is, you'll see it show up in the comics one way or another. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, as always, guys, if you see something exciting on the shelves or at your local comic book shop or in, just in the theater and around geek culture in general, let us know on social media with our hashtag YoPopX. If you use the hashtag, we could use your post on a future show of PopX Live. So, hey, hashtag YoPopX.
Yes. Also, we are part of an amazing network called Gunna Geek Network. For all things even more geeky, head over to GunnaGeek.com and check out some of the amazing podcasts on our home network. Make sure that you're following us on social media. You can find us on Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, Twitter, and Pinterest, all at PopXCast. We love to hear from our listeners, and you can send us comments and suggestions to popxcast@gmail.com. And also for future and past shows, make sure to check out our official website, www.popxcast.com.
Indeed.
Look at that.
All right. So anyway, so Lindsay Badger, how can people find you on the internet if they want to reach out to you or tweet you?
You can find me, Lindsay Badger, at LR Badger, all over the interwebs.
All right. And of course, Austin couldn't be with us this week. It is midterm for Austin. We're sending you all kinds of great
good vibes.
Good vibes.
Good to you.
Yeah. Hopefully you can pass those midterms and do amazing. You're a smart kid.
You
figure it out. Yeah. And I am Joe Burke, a.k.a. at Rotcav on the internet, ROTCAV. And of course, hats off to amazing Team PopX, Miss Lindsay Badger, for just doing all of her marketing bliss that she does every single week. Hats off to you, my dear.
Thank you.
You're welcome. And to Mr. Mike Ippolito for his slides and graphic love. Mike, we love you very much.
Yes. And to Joe for all of his awesome
really?
Knowledge.
Really?
Look at it. Oh, love it. It's Deadpool goodness,
just let it
you
soak
guys.
In. Just let it soak in for a little bit. Yeah. It's
somebody get that boy an extra quarter.
Oh, my gosh. So we do want to mention right quick before we head out that next week we will be we'll be doing the episode number 51, the Logan film review. We'll be actually talking about Logan, some of our favorite moments, some of our least favorite moments, what worked, what didn't. And Austin will be back with us that week as well. And with episode 51 will come kind of a shift up in our show schedule. PopX is changing to a bi-weekly format. Still at the same time and the same day, but it'll be on Sundays at 9 p.m. Eastern, just every other week. So after Logan, the following week, there will be no show. But the week after that, we'll have a show. So visit PopX Live for the full complete schedule of upcoming shows. Go to popxcast.com, click on live, and our schedule is right there. And you can be sure to know and put it in your calendar when PopX is going to be live, okay?
That's right.
So from all of us here at PopX Cast, thanks for listening. Thanks for downloading. And stay nerdy, stay geeky, and do that crazy geeky thing that you do. The Switch comes out this week, Badger.
I know.
Are you ready?
It's already paid for.
Are
I'm so ready.
You
Let's
ready?
Get our game on.
My good. It's going to be awesome. From all of us here, PopX, take care.
From everyone at PopXCast, thanks for listening. Be sure to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes and subscribe for more great content. Drop us an email, popxcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube, all at PopXCast. Get your geek on.